Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, the game, hour number two here on a Monday. Nick Braden, D. Mace, and Marquise, good to have you in following a Titans victory yesterday, 24-10 over the Falcons at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And right now, it's a Monday at 7 o'clock, so we welcome in our buddy Corey Curtis from News 2 for some reaction and takeaways from the game yesterday. Corey, your thoughts? Relatively a complete game yesterday for our Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, they got impactful plays in all three phases of the game, offense, defense, and special team. I mean, everybody on that team just oozed about how good Brett Kern won, but coverage was really good. And, you know, they're a different team when they can play with the lead, you know, quite obviously. I thought one of the big keys on this game, though, was their willingness to attack down the field and to do it early, to do it on first downs. You know, I thought they might do that. I thought they might try to make sure Corey Davis got involved. And it made a big, big difference in the football game. And, you know, whether you're for Mariota or against Mariota, I don't really want to get into. But he clearly looked calmer in the pocket. And his accuracy yesterday was as good as I can remember.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not going to even get in that, because the minute I say great things about him, then the next week it ends up being something else, and then you gotta start talking about it. So just let him do what he does, and hopefully what he's doing equates to a win
at the end of the year.
Exactly.
That would be an amazing thing.
Absolutely. This team played much different in the second half, and I don't know if it was just
they shut it down.
Yeah, I don't know if it was just, and I don't know if I like that, frankly. But there was one decision that kind of baffled me.
Exactly.
Why go for it? To me, things like that makes you want to question, like, what are you truly thinking? You know, because Atlanta, and maybe you just thought, hey, they're not going to move the ball on if our defense has been doing a great job. But you put your team in a position where if Sanu catches that pass, they're only down 7 points. What do you make of that decision by Vrabel? I think it was in the third or fourth quarter.
I don't want to be overly harsh or mean after a victory, but it might be the worst game managerial decision I've ever seen. I just sat there and was absolutely astounded, because a field goal, you know, it's a possession game at that point, because it was the fourth quarter, and it puts you up three possessions. A touchdown puts you up three possessions. So there wasn't that much to gain. And he talked about, you know, wanting to get his offense, you know, a play, and I guess, you know, really put it away. A field goal. It also, a field goal rewards your offense for a good drive at that point. They had, you know, marched the ball down the field. But they did shut it down in the second half. I mean, they tried to just run the football. I don't know how many passes. Did Mario throw like 9 passes the second half? I think, was that the number? Which, you know, and I'm not saying you got to go out there and air it out at that point. But, I mean, he's got 0 interceptions and 0 fumbles lost at this point. So he's taken pretty good care of the football. And I'm not saying you got to go out there and sling it around. But, you know, I think he's shown you can trust him to not turn it over in that critical situation. But they, you know, and you want to be able to put it away with Henry. But I thought they did lack aggressiveness offensively to put it away. And then to get hyper-aggressive and go for it on fourth down, I mean, like, it's sending mixed signals all over the place about what you're doing. And, you know, I don't know if Vrabel will defend that decision again today or not, but it staggered all of us in the press box. I mean, even if they get it, it's a bad decision. I mean, you know, it's whether you do things the right way or the wrong way and succeed, doesn't really matter. There's a right way and a wrong way, and that was just the wrong way.
We've talked about Marcus having time to throw and being quicker and more decisive. A lot of that depends on a lot of that to me hinges on the idea that he had a lot of time to throw. He was protected for the first time all season.
Well, he had a pocket.
He didn't have
guys flashing him. So even when there was pressure, he could step up and deliver the football.
And Nate Davis, I think, I don't know how much of a factor Nate Davis was. He played 62% of the snaps on offense versus Douglas being relegated to more of a reserve role. It's only his first game. What do you make of how he played? Why it took him till this point? I know the injuries have been undisclosed. It's just been sort of a weird start to his career. But does he have – is that a solution for them there? Did you see enough to say, hey, this could be the solution to the problem?
Well, I mean, they drafted him in the third round, and it wasn't to be a backup. I mean, my belief, and this is going back before the injury, was they wanted him to win that job. And if it wasn't going to be in week one, it was going to be in, like, week four, five, or six. So, I mean, I think that's what they thought of him, that he was the solution from the beginning. You know, the injury obviously knocked him out of the entire preseason, and then you're trying to get a guy – into game shape on the practice field when you barely put on pads on the practice field. It's a very tough scenario I'm sure that's not the scenario that they wanted. And because I was wondering going in, because, you know, it was obvious Vrabel really wanted him to play. I'm like, how on earth does this guy play four quarters, you know, doing what he's been doing? And so, you know, I think, did Douglas play the first drive or the first two drives?
I believe it was the first two.
I believe so,
okay.
Yeah.
And then he got in. But I think he was in on the one play drive, and then he was in on the next touchdown drive. So we were like, Nate Davis is perfect, two for two. And, you know, fortunately, you know, being at the game, you know, because on TV you can watch the ball, basically, we were able to try to focus in on him and some of what he was doing. And, you know, I saw, you know, he had a double team with Ben Jones and slid off to get to the linebacker at the next level. You know, looked like he stood up strong. You know, Grady Jarrett's a good football player, the guy he was going against. And it looked like he stood up pretty strong there. So I'm not going to declare it a huge win for Nate Davis. But from what I saw, you know, looked pretty good. And he's a big, strong dude. And that's what they've been really lacking in that spot, not to say that Quentin Spain and Josh Klein and Jameel Douglas aren't strong, but that big warhorse who cannot be put on roller skates and shoved back into the backfield, you know, if he can be that guy, that could make a big, big difference for them. And so yesterday, you know, I would just say yesterday you have to call a very positive step forward. And, you know, Buffalo is really good defensively. So I don't know if they're going to be ready to unleash him completely. I think maybe we might see kind of what we saw this week again for another game before they're ready to go fully to Nate Davis.
Speaking of being good defensively, Corey, the Tennessee Titans have been just that. So far this year, 13 points, 19 points, 20 points, 10 points allowed in the first four games. They're giving up just over 15 points per game. Are we giving this defense enough credit, or do we just take this unit for granted?
Well, I mean, we still wait for pressure without blitzing the quarterback. And we waited for it again yesterday. And then when they got up big, they were able to really go after him. I think Harold Landry finally got involved on a couple different plays, which was good to see. And, you know, I'm going to plug TN Nation, our show every Saturday night after news to attend. You know, one of the things, you know, we talked about was create turnovers. It's, you know, if this team wants to go from good to great defensively, they need to create turnovers consistently. They had zero sacks and zero turnovers at Jacksonville. And for as good as they played in that game, those two numbers are unacceptable against a rookie quarterback. You know, if you want to win that football game, you've got to create chaos. You know, the Chicago Bears consistently create chaos. The Patriots create chaos. The Ravens generally create chaos. And so they need to create more chaos. And one of the guys I said on the show that's had a quiet start to the season but has been an impactful player and needs to be again, Jarrell Casey. What did we see yesterday? Casey gets in, gets the strip sack and the recovery, the hat trick. It's a huge play in the game because the Falcons were driving. And, you know, those are just game changers. So the defense has largely been very good. If it can consistently get the turnovers, it can be mentioned in the great defenses in the league. The defensive backs, having said that, had a really good day yesterday. Adoree Jackson had a better game. Malcolm Butler, you know, who gave up 7 catches on 8 passes in Jacksonville, was fantastic yesterday. And anytime, I think Julio Jones' final numbers were 4 catches for 52 yards. That is a banner day for your defense. I know they gave up some stuff to Austin Hooper, but they did not let Julio Jones just go nuts on him, and that's tough to do.
Now, are you bringing up the tight ends? Are you any way concerned with the Titans moving forward and them covering tight ends, whether it be with the linebacker or safety? Because they did. I know what they were trying to do on the outside. They, you know, concentrated more so on those 3 receivers, but they did allow Hooper to pretty much have his way. I think he had like 9 catches, over 100 yards as a tight end. Are you concerned about that moving forward?
No, because I don't think we've seen it consistently. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to plug TN Nation one more time because I always get my fantasy plays on that show. My fantasy play for that game was Austin Hooper. I said, look out for this guy. He's going to have a big day because the Titans are going to want to slow down Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley on the outside. And they double, you know, they had a guy under and a guy over on Jones a lot of the day. And that left some stuff open to Hooper on the inside, who's a good player. And Matt Ryan is good at getting the ball to his tight end. And I'll just say Mike Mularkey is his coach. And when Mike Mularkey is your tight end coach, guess what? Your tight ends are usually pretty good. I mean, there's a track record there for that. So if we continue to see it, I'll be concerned. But Byard and Brown are usually the kind of the guys that got the tight end, and they usually do a really good job on those guys. So no, I'm not overly concerned. I view this one as more of an anomaly, but it, you know, it bears watching after seeing it, because he did have a really big day. He found some gaps in that seam. It was very Delanie Walker-like.
Corey, great stuff as always. We always appreciate the time. Thank you, sir.
All right. Maybe one day we'll actually be able to predict what this team's going to do.
If you can ever figure it out, let me know, because I'm done predicting this team. Corey Curtis, News 2, covers the Tennessee Titans. All right, we'll come back. The one thing that was a head-scratcher was Mike Vrabel yesterday. His decision to go for it on fourth down, confounding. The explanation, even more confounding. Back after this on Morning Drive.
You know, we were kind of playing with house money there, the way the ball, you know, had kind of been bouncing around. I thought our defense was playing great. Thought we could really end it there and get going offensively, but we didn't make it. We didn't end up, you know, converting. A lot of credit to our defense today. There's a lot of talent over there. It's a lot of really good skill players. You know, Matt Ryan's gotten into great rhythms in the last couple weeks in the second half, and we were able to hold him just to the field goal.
Titans head coach Mike Vrabel explaining yesterday why he went for it on fourth down instead of kicking the field goal. And I don't get the house money comment. I don't get the play call itself. Like, I get it. Your defense is good. Derrick Henry's rolling. You want to impose your will. Vrabel, you know, an aggressive coach by nature. But it is sheer simple math. It's, I think it was, what, 13 minutes to go in the game.
Yeah.
You can make that a 3-score game. Why are you being stupid?
It is completely... Well, we'll get to the decision itself in just a second, because I think we all... That's sort of an easy piece of analysis on radio. What the hell are you thinking? There's the analysis. We'll get to that. Here's what I want to ask you guys. The house money comment and how he described it and how his description of why he did what he did. I want to know what you guys think it meant, because here's what I think it meant. And again, I think this is totally up for interpretation. What I think it meant was he saw the fumble, the snap before, you know, they had sort of messed with the football, the play before that, and, you know, maybe they didn't think they were going to recover the ball and be in that situation. Is that what he means by house money? Is that, you know, we almost turned it over. We didn't think we were going to still have the football anyway. Marcus was lucky to get back on it. So we were playing with house money. Is it possible that's what he means? It still doesn't defend the situation at all.
Well, let's hear this one more time. Mike Vrabel, house money, his decision.
You know, we were kind of playing with house money there, the way the ball, you know, had kind of been bouncing around. I thought our defense was playing great. Thought we could really end it there and get going offensively.
but we didn't make it. We didn't end up, you know, converting. A lot of credit to our defense today. There's a lot of talent over there. It's a lot of really good skill players. You know, Matt Ryan's gotten into great rhythms in the last couple weeks in the second half, and we were able to hold them just to the field goal.
That's a nice pivot, by the way, by Vrabel.
I don't understand that. Okay, Al's money, the way the ball had been bouncing the whole game. It's been bouncing in your direction. Kick the field goal, and they're not. And you just said in the same breath, too, that your defense had been playing well. So why even put yourself in a position where, you know, if you kick the field goal, it's 13 minutes left. Even if they get a score, even if they get two scores, you still trust your defense that they're going to, you know, hold up their end of the bargain.
They need three touchdowns to beat you.
Absolutely.
They would need one more scoring drive in the final 13 minutes than they have had the entire game before.
Yeah. Yeah.
They had two scoring drives before that. They would have needed three in the final 12 minutes.
It makes no sense. The whole house money comment.
Did my explanation make sense? That like the ball, they shouldn't have recovered the fumble. Like, again, I am not suggesting it's the right decision. I think it was a terrible call. But I'm trying to get my head around what exactly he's saying there.
I don't know what he's saying. He's saying that he went for it, he didn't get it, so now he has to find a reason to justify going for it. I like what Corey said last segment. It's rewarding your team for a good drive. You kick the field goal. Everybody walks back to the sideline. Defense comes on the field, feels more confident in itself, saying, you know what? Even if they get a touchdown, we're not giving up 17 points in 13 minutes.
You're a 1-2 team. You do whatever you got to do to get out of there 2-2. And if the mathematical play is to make it a 3-score game with 13 minutes to go, against a team that has shown no signs of putting up points on you and threatening to beat you, you kick the field goal.
If you are a fan of a football team, and I told you you're going to have a 3-score lead with 13 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, you'd say, sign me up.
Yeah.
Like, that's the goal of the game, is to put your team away. Like,
top 10 defense.
Even better. Even more reason to do it, right? Like, again, if I'm a fan of a team and you tell me my team's going to go up 3 scores with 12 minutes to go in the game, you'd say that's sort of the goal every single Saturday, every single Sunday. That's the goal, is to go up 3 scores in the fourth quarter. Like, that's the point. And so it makes no sense at all. Again, the only explanation for the house money comment I can think of is that Marcus shouldn't have recovered the fumble. They were lucky to recover the fumble, and he viewed it as, oh, well, we shouldn't have had the ball anyway. Let's go for it, which is still a stupid decision. Even if he's right, and even if that is the explanation for what he's saying, it's still one of the dumbest things. And the bigger concern here is that now he's done it twice in a row. Mm-hmm. Fourth and sixth in the third quarter, down 14-0 to Jacksonville. If you kick the field goal, you've cut it to 11 points. You're still in the game, because when you go down the field and score on the next drive, it's 14-10, and you're in that game against Jacksonville. The decision to run 40 seconds off the clock with 4.5 minutes to go against the Colts, that's now three. And I'm not saying that was the deciding factor. There were other things that could have happened in that game, other things that could have been executed. But 2-4, like, I normally love the aggressiveness of Mike Vrabel to go for the win. Going for the win is kicking the field goal, right? That is going for the win. So I don't know. Two major head scratchers on fourth down, on chip shot field goals in the last two games. I don't know if you can point to that decision as costing them the game against Jacksonville. I think that's a little much, but it certainly played a large role. And then yesterday, they were lucky that it didn't bite them, because had Mohamed Sanu caught the touchdown, which albeit would have been a great play, all of a sudden you can feel things pucker on the offense, because then it's on them to not let Matt Ryan go back out on the field down 7. I just don't understand. It makes no sense.
Now, if there was different circumstances, like, let's just say yesterday was the Tennessee Titans at the Kansas City Chiefs, and it's the same time, 13 minutes to go in the third quarter, or fourth quarter, you're playing Patrick Mahomes on the road, and it's a 34-20 game, and you know it's a shootout, and you got to sketch 7s against Patrick Mahomes. I get that. But when you've held Atlanta to 10 points, you kick the field goal. If you're in a high scoring game where field goals will get you beat, so be it.
No, even in that situation against the Kansas City Chiefs with 13 minutes left, I'm kicking a field goal.
Three scores.
Because I'm still up three scores, and then I don't have to justify it. Even if we lose, I don't have to justify why I chose to go for it and didn't get it. I can say, listen, I went for the field goal. You know, I'm playing basic math. I'm playing the odds. We're up three touchdowns. Our defense is playing well. I'm hoping that we're going to do enough. Even if they have the ball at the end, we're going to do enough to win this ball game. But when you decide, again, when you decide not to take the point, and this is not the first time. There was situations last year that popped up, and you kind of was scratching your head like, man, what is he doing? I've come to the realization with him is just be a CEO. Let the defense call what they're going to call.
Is he too impulsive?
Yeah, don't. Yes, that's what he is.
He's got to take the helmet off.
He thinks too much like a player. And I said this last year.
Take the helmet off.
I said this last year about the challenges and everything. He thinks too much as like a player at times. You got to stay in the game as a head coach. He has to stay in head coach mode 100% of the time. He can't, for that brief moment, become a player. Because then when you become a player, you're subject to make decisions like you did last night. And it worked out great for you this time because the defense has just been playing so well. But had Atlanta come down and scored, it would have made a lot of people tight.
Now, let me ask you guys this real quickly.
Stillman thought it was the right call, so it's clearly not the right call.
Whatever Stillman says, I'm on the opposite side of it. I want to be on the right side of history. But what if that was fourth and goal at the 1 yard line? Do you go for it there, or do you take the points?
Take the points.
You just take the points, man. In that situation,
even at the 1 yard line,
you take the points in that situation because, again, Corey Curtis said it right. It's rewarding your offense for a well put together drive. At the end, we can say, you know what, we got some points. They're down three scores, and now we turn the ball and we go the other way
against Jacksonville. You know, rainy day, low scoring game. It's 14-0. If it's fourth and one instead of fourth and six, even then I'm okay with it. If it's fourth and one on the goal line versus fourth and six on the 15, like even then I'm maybe a little bit more okay with it. But that was the third quarter. You know, like, again, fourth quarter, it's just you play games to go up three scores in the fourth quarter. Like, that's how you want your game to go as a coach. I will say this on the coach, like, taking his helmet off as a player and putting his coaching hat on. He struggled early in his career last year with the challenge flags. I actually think he's done a very good job with the challenge flags since then. He did a good job keeping it in his pocket during the regular season last year after he made some mistakes. And then I think this year people wanted him to challenge these pass interference calls. But the NFL has made it very clear that they're not going to overturn too many pass interference calls. So I think he's actually making the right decisions there. Last year's aggressiveness to go for it, the two-point conversion against the Chargers, going for it on fourth down against the Eagles, there are selective moments where being aggressive can speak to your team. Not, we are in a guaranteed situation to win, and I just went the wrong direction. Like, it's to me, the decision yesterday and the decision against Jacksonville are very different than, hey, we've played against the Chargers. They're a really great team. We're down to one play. Let's roll the dice on a 50-50 play and try to win the game. That's, to me, a very different decision. That's more of a 50-50 call. Yesterday was a 100% decision to kick a field goal, and he went with the 0% decision. And more importantly, his explanation was rambling and vague and just say it was the wrong call, dude. Just say, listen, we should have kicked the field goal. That's on me. I'll do better next time. But instead, he's like, well, but the defense is great, and the Falcons have a lot of weapons, and we were house money. Like, vague, rambling answer that made no sense at all. Just own it, dude. Just say it was the wrong call. We're going to do better next time.
All right, Titans fans, what did you make of that call by Vrabel? 615-737-1025. The number 737-1025. We'll open up the phones again, take your calls on Mike Vrabel. Obviously, the decision didn't hurt him. They won by two touchdowns. But what did you make of Vrabel's decision and the explanation on house money? 737-1025. We're back after this on Morning Drive. That is Morning Drive. The scenario was pretty simple. You kick the field goal, you go up 17. But Mike Vrabel says, what the hell? We're playing with house money. Let's go for it. 737-1025, the number. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and Marquise with you. We'll take your calls now on that Vrabel decision. Let's go to Frick, who's next on Morning Drive. What's up, Fricky?
Hey, what's going on, man? Yeah, I didn't understand the decision. And the only reasonable explanation I can come up with, and I don't know why he would have any reason not to trust him, but, I mean, if you walked in and that's the only play you saw of the game, you didn't know anything about either team, one would naturally assume, well, he must not trust his kicker. The kicker must either be injured or maybe he's missed a lot. But I can't think of any reason why Vrabel would have to not trust Santos in that situation. But I haven't heard anybody touch on that. But like I said, that would be what you would have to assume if you've seen that situation with any other team.
You think he kicks it if Suckup is still the kicker?
To me, both of those
– Santos has been good.
And these are not long – like if it was a 53-yard field goal and you want to go for it on fourth and one, okay, we can have – it's a far different discussion then, right? Mm-hmm. Like Santos is a guy who signed off the street. Maybe the distance is a concern. But, you know, fourth and six against Jacksonville was a 29-yard field goal, I think. And last night, I need to check the yard line, but I'm pretty sure they were inside the 20. Like, you're talking about chip shots here. You take the points. You don't – I don't know.
I mean, I could somewhat understand it in the college ranks because we know college kickers, all they do is miss, and that drives me insane. But, I mean, you know, if you had Suckup, I think – you probably kick it. If you've got Santos, you should kick it. Now, did Santos, he missed one, was it a couple of weeks ago from 45?
He missed it after the Marcus sack.
Which it was the Colts game, right?
Which we killed Marcus for on that sack, taking it. It was still a 45-yard field goal, which for NFL kickers is still a pretty high percentage kick. Like,
sure.
You still should make, you're a professional kicker, you should make 45-yard field goals. 29-yard field goals and 37-yard field goals are almost automatic. Like 90 percentile territory.
Well, the extra point now is what, 34? 34 yards? Yeah, basically an extra point?
And while the percentages on extra points have come way down, they're still in the 90 percentile range. Like it's still for professional NFL kickers who make millions of dollars to put the football through the uprights, those are automatic plays.
You only have one job only, and that's to kick the ball through the uprights. So do it, damn it. No.
he didn't get a chance, Derek. Let's not get
too
angry.
I just don't, you know. Hopefully moving forward, these are, you know, lessons learned, you know, by the head coach that, you know, when you have a 14-point lead and you can build on that 14-point lead by 3 points, then take the 3 points.
They were on the 10-yard line.
It's rewarding your defense. It means rewarding your offense for moving the ball down the field. And then the defense goes back on the field, and they feel more confident. Like, listen, we're up 3 scores. There's no way they can come back. If they don't, you know, they don't get that first down, which they didn't. Atlanta goes down and score, and I know hindsight is 20/20. Atlanta goes down and score. It's a new ball game, folks. And I don't trust under that scenario that the Titans offensively is going to pull it out. Because now – those easy calls that you were making become a little bit more tighter.
Everybody's puckered up,
exactly.
Man.
And then every call you make has to be the right call.
I was puckered up when Atlanta was going down the field and it was 24-10, and Atlanta had gone all the way into the territory. You know, before the fourth down sack by Jaylen Brown, I believe. Like I'm sitting there going, "Oh my God, they're about to cut this to 7, and it's going to turn into a game because Vrabel screwed it up." The one against Jacksonville was the first drive of the third quarter. On the 11-yard line on a 4th and 6. You take the 3 points. Yesterday, they were on the 10-yard line. That is a 29 and a 28-yard field goal, right? Or a 28 and a 27-yard field goal. That's 100% accuracy almost at that point. Maybe 98, whatever. But, like, 29-yard field goal, 28-yard field goal, you take the points. It's just, I don't know, it makes no sense.
All right, so let's go around the AFC South yesterday and how everything impacts the Tennessee Titans, who did get a win and improved to 2-2. The Texans lose at home to a Kyle Allen-led Carolina Panthers team, so that's good for the Titans. The Colts lose at home as a touchdown favorite to John Gruden and the Raiders. That helps the Tennessee Titans. But Gardner Minshew mania continues as he went in the Mile High and beat Joe Flacco. Now we've got 4 teams, all 2-2.
You said that helps the Titans. It doesn't help the Titans. It really doesn't.
Well, it doesn't.
Well,
the losses. You know what would have helped the Titans had they split 1-1 in the division.
Well, yeah, I mean, being 0-2 in the division sucks.
Sure, but it's in the past.
But that ultimately is what in this league on your division. You got to win your division first in order to secure yourself a playoff berth. And the Titans, even though everyone's record is 2-2, the Titans sit in last place.
Yep.
In their division, and that's not a good thing. I guarantee you, Vrabel would have rather had them beat Indianapolis and Jacksonville and lose to Atlanta and Cleveland. Because now, sure. If that happens,
yeah, we all agree with that.
You're up. You're first in the division. Now they sit. Even though everyone's 2-2, they sit last in the division. They got to make those games up. How they make them up, I don't know, because every team in that division is pretty good.
Technically, they're tied for first.
Yeah. Yeah, they're tied first, but they're in last.
I mean, you're totally right. Like, again, we need to have a bigger discussion. We will this week about Taylor Lewan. Frankly, we have not talked about Taylor Lewan. But if the offensive line is going to show progress and you're going to bring Lewan back, I know you're going up against the Buffalo Bills.
Well,
it's going to take
him a couple weeks to get into it.
No question. Listen, we all – 2-2, if you had told everybody the day the suspension came down for Taylor Lewan, he's going to miss four games, and we sat on the air and said, we're going to take 2-2. Everybody would have taken 2-2. Would you have preferred it to have been the other two wins? Of course. You would have much rather have been the two games you were favored in, by the way, to win, not the two games you were larger underdogs in, which is just how schizophrenic the league can be. We all agree that you'd rather be 1-1 or 2-0 in the division, but every time Houston and Indianapolis lose, it's a good thing for the Titans, regardless of what their records are in any other situation. If those teams continue to lose and the Titans continue to win, they can still win the division. So you just have to have a better record than the other guys, which means your margin for error is now smaller because you don't have the tiebreaker.
615-737-1025. The number, if you want to jump in, 737-1025. Tony Barnhart's going to join us at the top of the hour. We'll talk some SEC with Tony. Also, Darren McFarland from 102.5 The Game, Preds Radio Network, will join us at the 9 o'clock hour as we get ready for Preds opening week. And right now, need to tell you about Predators fans. Here's what you got to do if you want to go to the opening game Thursday night, Bridgestone Arena. Stop by Cool Springs Wine and Spirits, located at 1935 Mallory Lane in Cool Springs, tomorrow afternoon, and register to win a pair of tickets. Jared and the GM will be broadcasting live from 2 to 6 and giving away tickets to the season opener against the Minnesota Wild on Thursday night. We will come back. A couple of interesting things in college football. If you thought Vrabel's decision was a little confusing, what are people making of Mack Brown and his decision against Clemson? We'll hit on all that coming up next on Morning Drive.
Guys, the internet, very simple. You need it almost every minute of the day because, hey, you got shows to stream, emails to reply to, LOLs on social media. You got to smash that like button. You know, download the ESPN The Game app and smash that like button on the podcast. That's why you need Xfinity. You can get the fastest, most reliable internet with gig speeds available so you can get online and get down to business faster. And Xfinity delivers enhanced network security so all of your connected devices are protected. Get instant alerts when strangers are trying to hop onto your network. Can't have all those strangers getting on your Wi-Fi. Set curfews with parental controls and pause your Wi-Fi at dinner time. Got to keep my kids from watching South Park. The 3-year-old loves South Park. That's why with Xfinity, life is easy, the best internet provider in America, according to speedtest.net. Now, that's simple, easy, and awesome. Get started with Xfinity Internet for $20 a month for 12 months with a one-year agreement, or get four times the speed for just $10 more a month for 12 months, plus add enhanced network security. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit an Xfinity store today. Requires EcoBill and AutoPay, ends 1-7-20. Restrictions apply. New performance starter, 25 megabits, customers only. Equipment, taxes, and fees, extra, and subject to change after term. Regular rates apply. Actual speeds vary and are not guaranteed.
Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tony Barnhart from the SEC Network will join us coming up in just about 15 minutes. A couple of things from college football. We did the SEC last hour at 6:45. Two things that I thought really stood out this weekend in college football was, number one, the scare that Clemson got against North Carolina, and we were just discussing Mike Vrabel and coaching decisions. Let's get into Mack Brown's decision for North Carolina, because I don't believe that anybody should be questioning that. Like, if you're Carolina, you've already lost multiple games, you got nothing to lose, you're way ahead of schedule, you're at home. Try to take out Clemson and Dabo. Go for it. I loved it.
How many, from a statistical standpoint, and I know baseball is big into the sabermetrics, but in a football situation, just statistically, how often are you going to be 3 yards away from probably beating the defending champs and number one team in the nation at home? Like, you're just never going to be
no.
that have that sort of singular opportunity to win. Now, I know there was a minute and 11 left on the clock, and Clemson could have gone back down the field.
As a four-touchdown underdog.
Yeah, exactly. Like, dude, you lost 11 games last year.
Mm-hmm.
You're clearly ahead of schedule. You've got a great true freshman quarterback in Sam Howell. You're clearly a better team than you were last year, and you are 3 yards away. I do not question the decision at all. I never thought for a minute they were going to get it, which is really strange, because I just thought Clemson would come up big and make a big play, because that's what Clemson does. But I just don't. I have no problem with the decision to go for it. You know, if it's Clemson, it's different. If I'm Clemson, I'm taking the point. If I'm the Clemson Tigers, I'm going to lean on my depth and my athleticism and my talent and say, you know what, I think we can wear you out in overtime, and I think we're going to win. If it was Clemson in that situation, I would take the extra point. But mm-hmm. you're North Carolina. The risk and reward. What's the reward for Mac Brown? Being on national television every single second of this week if they make that play, right? They're on national TV building their brand, saying, look, we beat number one Clemson every day for the rest of the season. That's the reward. Mm-hmm. The risk is you played great and you lost hard to number one Clemson, which is probably what's going to happen anyway. So to me, it's a no-brainer.
If you win that game, one, Mac Brown did an excellent job at getting his team up to play that game at home and found themselves in a position where they could have won. I think that was the right decision. But I think I think that was a bad play because you took away half the field.
Against an athletic defense.
Exactly. But if you score the 2 points, you've essentially probably, considering the way this league this year is going, you probably knock Clemson out of the playoffs. if you win that game, you probably knock Clemson based on their schedule.
Based on
Clemson's strength of schedule and everyone else's. If everyone else basically runs the table or have one loss, you essentially knock Clemson out of the playoffs. And your team is leaps and bounds ahead of schedule if you win that game.
At the very least, Clemson would have to go on like a streak where not only do they win out, but they do it like Tebow and Florida did like a decade ago where they won by 50 points a game.
They would have to.
Listen, they lost to 4-8 Syracuse and still made the playoff. They lost to a middle-of-the-pack Pittsburgh team and still made the playoff. So everyone's going to have a loss. All these teams ahead are in the top 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 are all going to lose games with the exception of one of them or two of them. I'm not going to go that far. A road loss to a North Carolina team that's clearly better is not
that you were a,
it's not a
basically
kiss of
death, you're a 3-point they were a three touchdown dog.
Now, I get
four
that they didn't play well down the stretch. They took, you know, Trevor Lawrence took too many hits, mm-hmm. and they allowed North Carolina to run the ball a little bit too much. But again, they lost to 4-8 Syracuse and got in. So the key is how the loss takes place. You cannot lose badly to mediocre teams. Ohio State gave up. You know, they got boat raced by Purdue. They got boat raced by Iowa. You know, Georgia last year got pushed around by LSU. It's not necessarily who you lose to. It's how you lose. A one-point loss with Mac Brown gambling on the river there and kind of, you know, winning a game. I don't think
but a one-point loss.
I don't think it would have eliminated.
And you haven't played well the whole season. Really, people have been questioning whether you are the number one team in the country with a loss. And then essentially
they've crushed, you know, everybody they've played.
But they haven't. If you look at all of the other teams that are in the top, let's say top six, Clemson might be, based upon what I've seen, Clemson might not be a top four team. Upon what we've seen.
Sure.
I'm not saying that if they played against one of these teams, they wouldn't beat them. But I'm saying based on what we've seen, they might not be a top four team. But you would essentially have to run the table and hope that there's more than one two-loss team, because your resume says that it's not tough.
I agree with your point, and that is Clemson's resume at the end of the year won't be as good as somebody else's.
Exactly.
I agree with that. There's no question about that. I still will take the best player in America who's never lost
a game. Of course. That's just like
Georgia. Who's never lost a game. Like,
that's just like Georgia last year.
LSU has a really good win over Texas. Georgia has a really good win over Notre Dame. Otherwise, who's Alabama played? Nobody. Who's Ohio State played? Nobody. Who's Oklahoma played? Nobody. They've been far more dominant than Clemson, mm-hmm. But they haven't played anybody. Clemson's played Texas A&M. They've played at Syracuse. They've played at North Carolina, and they didn't play well in that game. But they did blow out Syracuse on the road, and they did
the only ranked opponent Clemson has left is Wake Forest.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And even that's a weird ranked. Are you guys ready to live in a world where Minnesota and Wake Forest are both 8-0? Are you guys ready to live in that world? Because just be prepared for Minnesota and Wake Forest to have very good records in November, which is a weird thing to say. I don't want to. Frankly, I don't want to live in a world where Minnesota and Wake Forest are undefeated.
I don't mind,
but Gopher
fans don't mind.
Change it up a little bit. I do think there's a larger discussion about who is number one. And if you told me, I think we're overreacting to 5 weeks of football. Personally, if you told me the mortgage is on the line, my children's lives are hanging in the balance, who are you taking to win a football game right now? I'm taking Bama. I think
Clemson is not in my top four right now.
But Clemson would be number two.
Yeah, Clemson's not in my top four right now. Based upon what I've seen from all the teams in the top five or six.
Of course, but let's take Bama out of it.
Uh-huh.
If you have to win a football game right now in the national championship game against whoever, pick the team, all the other teams, Ohio State, just any team, you've got to win a national championship right now.
I'm taking O State.
Which, in your life, your children's lives depend on it.
I'm taking O State.
I still am taking Trevor Lawrence.
I'm taking O State because of the way if that defense hold up the way they have, I'm taking O State because Justin Fields has looked damn
They thoroughly embarrassed Nebraska. Yes.
They haven't. I agree. They haven't played anybody. Ryan Day hasn't proven anything, and Justin Fields hasn't played in a big game in his career. I'm taking Trevor Lawrence and Dabo Swinney and saying, you know what? You can pick whoever else you want. I'm not saying they've played better than everyone else, but if you're telling me who's the better team, you're going to every.
Wait, so you're taking Bama or Clemson?
Bama won.
Okay.
I'm saying take Bama out of the equation. Okay. If you take Bama out of the equation, who's the team you would put on the field right now if you had to? Like, you're in prison in Iran, mm-hmm. and the IRGC is saying we are going to kill you and your family unless you win a football game. Who do you take? And I will go with the quarterback who I think is the best player in America, the coaching staff who's built the best program in America.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence is not the best player in America.
Okay,
Trevor Lawrence has looked awful this year.
Awful is a really
this is what you guys do. You college football national media guys fall in love with one game because he looked better than Tua. Tua Tagovailoa looks leaps and bounds better than Trevor Lawrence this year. You can look at stats. You can look at tape, the eye test. There's no way you can. Now, look.
Tua's played better. I've never argued that.
Trevor Lawrence could be the next Andrew Luck. But right now, Tua Tagovailoa is leaps and bounds better at this moment through 5 weeks than Trevor Lawrence.
If you're gonna take
the Trevor Lawrence thing, has got to just die down.
If you're going to take the national media shot, then I get to take the Alabama homer shot.
It's not a homer shot. It's what, 20 touchdowns and no picks?
23, actually.
23?
Tua has played better football against nobody. Tua has played better football than Trevor. So is Jalen Hurts. So is Justin Fields. So is Joe Burrow and Sam Ellinger. They've all played better than Trevor Lawrence. It doesn't make them better players.
Yeah, but this whole thing.
They're not better prospects than Trevor Lawrence.
I'm not talking about prospect. I'm talking about college football right now. Tua is better than Trevor Lawrence.
Tua has played better.
Is better than Trevor Lawrence right now.
Tua has played better. All those quarterbacks have played better than Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, and I'm not saying otherwise, by the way.
I think ultimately Trevor Lawrence is the better player.
I would say right now, and I look NFL draft ability, whatever. I would say Tua. I would say Burrow, Fields, Hurts. There's probably four or five quarterbacks.
Fields have looked
better than Trevor.
They're all in the same category as like front runner for the high. Like they're all in the same group, right? Burrow, I throw Ellinger into that conversation as well. We have super quarterbacks right now all across the country. They're all playing extremely well. And most of them have played better than Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence also had over 400 yards of offense and 4 touchdowns against Clemson on the road in a blowout win. I mean, it's not like, again, we are nitpicking greatness here. This is what we do with Alabama. Like, if you want to criticize Alabama and say, oh, well, they give up 31 to Ole Miss and their defense isn't playing as well, you're nitpicking greatness.
But I don't think Bama's defense is great.
Right, and that's fair.
Not at all.
But you're still nitpicking the best team in America. Probably. Like the point is we're nitpicking here because we've built them up so much in our conversations and in the offseason that if they don't play near perfect football, that we think it's the end of the world and we use phrases like awful. Trevor Lawrence has not been awful. He's just not been as good as we expected.
Well, I mean, going into last week, he had more interceptions than touchdowns, right?
Well, I think he had he won less, maybe. But again, irrelevant. He's thrown more picks this year than last year. He has not played up to his standards.
I mean, I picked him to win the Heisman, so I feel like a dope.
I think what happens is he's taking more chances.
Yeah, he's pressing.
He trusts his arm on every occasion. And more importantly, he trusted his 6'3 receivers that if he throws it up, they're going to get it. And it's not always that way. You got to be calculated in what you do. And at this point in time, he's not being calculated. He's just saying, you know what? My guys are better than yours. I'm going to throw it up, and they're going to make the play.
Tua throws slant routes all game, and they go for 80 yards. Alabama throws 9-yard passes.
I'm taking Justin Fields and what Oklahoma has been able, not Oklahoma, but Ohio State has been able to do. That defense is what really has impressed me. Now, granted, they hadn't played anyone, but that defense is getting turnovers. They're
Ohio
playing
State's
aggressive.
Dangerous. No question.
I would take, to me, Ohio State at this point in time, it's Alabama. I would put Alabama 1. I'll put LSU 2. Ooh. I will put Ohio State 3. And then I'll put Oklahoma at 4. Clemson, based upon what I've seen, now they might be able to beat all three of those teams except Alabama if you put them head up. I don't know. But from what I've seen, they would be right outside the top 4, right along with Wisconsin, even though I think Wisconsin, if their defense continue to play the way they've been playing.
But
they have
Georgia.
A quarterback
don't
problem.
Leave Georgia out of it either.
But Georgia, I don't think Georgia would beat Alabama. I don't think Georgia would beat LSU or Clemson or Ohio State. I just don't think they would beat those four teams.
The fact that we can have this discussion is good for college football. The fact that we can argue any of these six teams to be number one in the nation is good. Now, I would, to your point, Nick, I would not have Trevor Lawrence anywhere near the top of the Heisman list, but I still think he's the best player. Like, Chris Leak had better numbers, won a championship, and had way better numbers and stats and accomplishments than Eli Manning. Who's the better football player? Eli Manning.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So it's not about necessarily how many touchdowns you threw against Ole Miss and Duke. It's about how who's the better football player. Trevor Lawrence is still, I think, the best player in America. Although, you know who might have a case for this? Chase Young. The defensive lineman at Ohio State might be the number one overall pick coming up this year. So it's a great conversation. Trevor needs to be better. Clemson is still probably going to be like 30-0 going into the playoffs under Trevor Lawrence. So still never lost a game.
All right, coming up next, Tony Barnhart from the SEC Network will continue this conversation on the other side of Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part, guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.